Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Gigabit Nation, Broadband Talk Radio. We're here to help public, private, and nonprofit organizations get broadband to everywhere it needs to be. I don't feel it's an exaggeration to say that a typical broadband network, whether it's a community network, a private network, whether it lives and does well or it perishes, depends on how well that network is marketed. Community networks in particular have their work cut out for them because incumbents will typically try just about everything in their power to put these community networks out of business. And so smart marketing in general is how smaller broadband networks, community networks, and so forth level the playing field. And it's a discipline that I feel that a lot more people need to know about. And today, I think we're in really good in a good place because I don't think no one knows this better in terms of the value of marketing than our guest today, who is Kyle Holyfield, who is the Vice President of Marketing and Business Development for Bristol, Virginia Utilities. And Bristol, Virginia's Utilities, BVU, has set up a nonprofit subsidiary, BVU OptiNet, and they have become one of the more successful networks in the U.S. So, Kyle, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Craig. It's certainly a pleasure to be here today.
And now, for some the few who may not be familiar with Bristol's network, can you give us just a brief background of how the network got started and then where it is today in terms of subscriber numbers and geographic coverage?
Yeah, Craig, I'll be happy to. Like most community broadband networks, they kind of start out of a need. Our first need, we are a public utility. We provide electricity, water, wastewater. Of course, now we offer broadband, voice, and also video. Back in the day, back around 2002, 2003, because of our substations, be able to accurately control those substations, which is really vital for not only our power grid, but the whole country's power grid. And you've probably heard some things about smart grid mm-hmm. built around those issues. We had to have a reliable and extremely fast way to control those remotely. So we put in a fiber network to all those substations. Once that investment was made, it was quickly realized that you have a network and a ring around the city, around the town, so maybe there's a way to leverage this. And, of course, what happens typically in these situations is that anchor institutions, mainly your own government, schools, libraries, health centers, things like that, looking for much better, more reliable broadband approached us and said, can we get on your ring some way? That led to building laterals or drops or last mile, as some people call it, and led to a little business model. Very shortly, the demand just kind of grew for more and more business services. The economic development people started seeing it as an economic development tool, as something that would spur economic development by bringing businesses that are involved in broadband products and services. So that put more pressure on us as a utility to look deeper and deeper into it. And we very quickly realized, to make a real business model out of it, we really had to have what's commonly known as triple play. Some people don't know what that is. If you don't, that just means that you'd be able to provide telephone service, broadband internet service, and video TV, like cable TV, to your client base. And those numbers would build up a business model that would be sustain the network, because you can't build it if you can't sustain it. And that's one of the things that all communities are up against that go into this business. They need to understand it has to be sustainable. You can't ask the taxpayers to subsidize it. It has to stand on its own. And, of course, being a government entity, we're not allowed to make a profit. So any overages that we do make, which are considerable in some years, we actually plow right back into that technology, expanding that technology. So we put those pieces together. I could speak for hours about what the process was. I can tell you it took a lot of grassroots work. There was a lot of political work that had to be done with, and there was a lot of education. The biggest issue is educating the public and educating your own politicians on what this really means. So those plans were put in place, and we started building the network out in earnest probably around 2003, 2004. Obviously, the incumbent in this particular case, the Comcast and Charter, and now it's called CenturyLink, then it was Sprint, protested that we may get into this business and actually file a lawsuit. In our case, we had another barrier. We happen to be what's called a Dillon Law state. What that really means is when you're a corporate entity owned by a state government or a city government, and you're in the state of Commonwealth of Virginia, for instance, and we're a Dillon Law Commonwealth, unless it specifically states in your charter that you can do a particular service or product, then you are not allowed by law to do that. So we had two barriers. One barrier was we're a Dillon Law state, so we had to get the law changed. And number two, we had incumbents who sued us saying that we weren't playing fair. Mm-hmm. Of course, what happened is, I won't bore everybody with all the lawsuits. We spent a couple of $1 million before it was all over with, which sounds a little scary, but the payback was tremendous at the end to get through all these processes. The legislature actually changed that part of our charter to allow us to be in this business and expand it out. So try to move forward as fast as I can here. We started actually offering services and full triple services probably around 2007. Since that time, matter of fact, when we rolled those services out in our marketing plan, we actually pre-sold with just a paper commitment, no money, financial commitment for the community to log on to our services. And we had an actual six-month waiting period for people to be installed when we rolled our first product out. So it was a really, really great launch. Since that time, we've grown the product base in our electric footprint, which is where we're allowed to operate all three services. We're around 70% penetration. In other words, we have about 70% market share as the overbuilder. In the outlying areas where we only are allowed to offer two services, our penetration rates run anywhere from 20 to 45%, but we have an overall mix rate of about 65%. And what's really interesting is our typical customer takes 2.2 services from us. So out of the three services that we offer, 2.2 of those every customer has in some combination. And my understanding is national average is somewhere around 1.7, so we're way ahead of that. So that's kind of a thumbnail sketch of what we went through. I can tell you it was painful, but well worth the pain.
No doubt. Now, let me ask a question here. This is a marketing question. You mentioned that the network started to address the smart grid. And I was writing another piece for a publication, and I said one of the things that needs to happen for a network to be successful is it should probably start with one focus. Because you have networks that are starting now. You know, you have the Google network in Kansas City. There are the various networks that were funded by the broadband stimulus. And you have a lot of people saying, we want the killer app, and we want to know what all various applications are. And they kind of come out with this laundry list of objectives. But what I seem to find or see as a pattern are networks like Chattanooga, Danville, Virginia, you guys in Bristol, starting with one primary focus and then expanding after you've accomplished that milestone to then address some of the other types of services. Is that the norm, do you think?
Well, I think it is the norm, at least for municipalities. Anytime a municipality gets into this business, you really have some heavy lifting politically. And you have to convince the grassroots to help you convince the politicians that this is something that we need to do, or that the municipality needs to do. In order to do that, you have to have a clear focus of objectives. And sometimes they lose focus a little bit, politically you get kind of ground into to the currents of ebb and flow of different people's objectives. But if you can stay focused on what is it? Number one, providing a community with a product or service that will spur economic development and build job growth. I think that's really important. And number two is to have a reliable resource that you know can reliably sustain the community way out into the future. There is absolutely nothing wrong with private enterprise. I came from private enterprise world, And in my case, it might have been a smart thing that our utility did. They actually went outside the utility mentality and said, let's find someone that competes every day all the time. Most utilities, you don't have to compete. You sell monopolistic services. Mm-hmm. So I think that was probably a smart idea on their part to reach out to someone outside of the actual utility. I was in the business, but outside of utility mindset. Mm-hmm. So I think focusing on those type of things that help the community build economic development is always a winner. And if you can just keep that focus as you move forward, then you'll have a lot of support. And that grassroots support is just really critical anytime you do this.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying you're looking outside of the utility for the people to drive the marketing effort.
Well, in our case, that's exactly what they did. One of the things that we always say is you don't know what you don't know. And if you're smart enough to say, you know what, we're going into a whole new venture. We're used to clients coming through the door and saying, I must have electricity if I want to be here, and I must have water unless I want to dig a well. It's different. There's this idea that if you build it, they will come is not necessarily true. If you build it, you have an opportunity to bring them. That's really what it's all about. Mm-hmm. So in my particular case, I think it worked out really, really well for BVU.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you were to point to your greatest marketing campaign, what would that be? What did you do that you really felt proud of and that was very effective at bringing in subscribers?
Well, Craig, that's a hard one to answer because to date, knock on wood, we've been successful. Every campaign that we've done, every build-out that we've done, every expansion we've done has been really successful, both in terms of community acceptance, in terms of financial feasibility, and in terms of long-term stability to the whole network. Obviously, we always point to the first one. I mean, when we first built the network, there were a lot of naysayers, as you can imagine, and most of them were incumbents and groups that the incumbents tried to marshal together to say, you should not be in this business. You're a public utility. You should not be competing in non-utility products and services. And so there was kind of like, we will show you attitude at BVU and others. Chattanooga had that attitude. I think Dalton, Georgia had that attitude. LUS definitely has that attitude. You'll see those communities, those leaders that led that effort say, we want to show you that this does work. So I think the initial rollout, the fact that you have over 183-day waiting list for people that said, I want to sign on to your service. And these were people that had existing comparable services in the sense that they were already provided a cable TV service. They were provided a broadband service of some type and a voice service of some type. So they weren't without it. They just saw the opportunity for a better solution for them at a better price point and also to help that drive that economic development. So I think that very first one, well, we proved to the community and at that time, if you remember, Craig, we were like the first in the nation to offer triple play over a broadband network.
Right, exactly.
We actually, actually showed the country that, hey, this can be done by municipality. We're very proud of that. So we have to look at that one. And when I look at the key elements, and of course, we've done others since then. I'll give you another quick example. Just this past February, we've got a middle mile grant from the federal government from the NTIA BTOP program.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry about all the acronyms, but if it's government-related, it's got to be acronyms.
You've got to have an acronym, and people, I think, on the show have come for are used to it now.
So anyway, there's a government program that was instituted for the middle mile program, and then you find funds for your last mile. In other words, the middle mile, for those that are listening, that's your backbone fiber network. That takes you. It's kind of like your super internet highway. It's your interstate highway that runs everywhere. And then you've got the exit ramps that go off to customers that we call our laterals, or we call our last mile, or we call our drops.
Mm-hmm.
So this only pays for the middle mile. This only pays for interstate highway. It doesn't pay for your exit ramps to get to clients. But it got us into a community that we've been wanting to get into for a while. A little small community called Hilton's that was just on the edge of getting broadband through maybe some DSL services. A lot of people there have satellite-type services for their video. It's kind of on the edge of getting true services in a community of about 500. What's distinct about this community of 500 homes is not residents but homes. Distinct about that, it's some considered the birthplace of country music, which is a big deal in the market that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
The Carter family traditional home is there. It's called the Carter Fold. Johnny Cash married into that family. Johnny Cash lived there for a number of years, especially in his later in his life. And they have a museum there that's been funded. It's been declared a historical monument. So what we did is when we're able finally to get in there to provide those people services, we actually rented out the complete music hall and brought in country, really high professional country people, musicians, and artists, and we had local politicians come in, and we just had a free dance for everybody, and we talked about our products and services. We gave away autographed guitars, all kinds of community outreach services. What's interesting about it is that was on the 6th day of February. By the 6th day of March, we had already penetrated 30% of those customers. So that was a really effective one in like a 30 to 45 day time frame. We actually had 30% of the market share, and that continues to grow to this day.
Mm-hmm. Now, which community was that again? You said
that's Hilton's, Hiltons. That's the Hilton's community, and you can Google that, and you'll find many articles about how we did that for that community. So those type of things we're really, really proud of because they take a lot of – and if you don't mind, Craig, I'd like to talk about some of those elements if you have
no,
a
no,
moment.
No, definitely. I think that's what people need to hear.
You know, the first part, the most important part of any marketing campaign, and I guess I need to kind of regress a little bit. The most important part is for the organization to understand how critical marketing is to the whole success of the organization. Especially in a utility environment or in a municipality environment, you really need to understand how important that is. And if you don't understand that, and you're in the leadership position of an organization like that, you need to find someone who does understand that and give them some free rein. It's really, really critical to your success. So once you get that out of the way, the most important element is planning. We planned for a good 8 months, knowing we were going to go there, on exactly how we were going to do this. Mm-hmm. And I won't go into all the details of the planning, but it was a multifaceted plan. We actually secured the billboards on both ends of the town that we were going to, coming and going, and it said, you know, we're on our way. We didn't say who we are. We just said we are on our way. And talk mm-hmm. about piquing interest. You know, the next mm-hmm. billboard family said, you know, we're going to be here at the speed of light. Well, what could that be? You know, and we just built that kind of momentum in the community. And as our crews are out building this fiber, you know, we built a lot of buzz around that kind of planning. Then the next thing is we really wanted to understand. The next thing was, how do we understand this market? Just because it's only 30 miles away doesn't mean you have the same customer base. And I think sometimes we get caught in the think that everybody is homogeneous. And they're really not. So we did a lot of data research on that 500 homes. We did a lot of research. And some of the most interesting research I did, Craig, was actually going to a country store that was at the crossroads of all the activity and just hanging out for a couple of days and just watching people interact with each other and just talk to people about what they did every day. It's amazing what you can garner when you go inside the community. So we spent a lot of time talking about, of course, what was the most important thing to that community, what were they the most proud of, that country music museum and music hall that was, you know, declared a state historic monument. I mean, mm-hmm. they were very proud of that. So we centered all our activities around that idea. Then the next thing we did is we did a breakthrough offer. And if you don't, and Craig, from a marketing perspective and a sales perspective, when you're trying to convert a customer from product A to product B, as you well know, it takes active involvement for the customer to make a logical decision and then to actually take an action. You know, all of us are busy all day long. We get offers all day long, email offers, mail offers, TV offers. I mean, when you look around your world, you're being bombarded all the time with ideas about products. But which one of those products actually mobilizes you to take an action, because you must take a positive action to actually source that product, you know, to buy onto that product. So what we did is we made a breakthrough offer. We said that we know that most of you are satellite customers because you had no choice on the video side. We know you're in a contract. You know what? We're going to buy you out of your contract. As long as the numbers work for us and you sign a long-term contract with us, we'll just buy you out. There's no cash out of your pocket. We'll move you right in to our product line. The other really, really important offer was you're going to go from a very slow DSL of maybe 1.5 megs. We can take you immediately to 20, 30, 50 megs. Now, we can address this maybe later, Craig, but what's really interesting about that is when you talk in terms of speed, as you know, customers don't understand it. But when you talk in terms of utilization, and that's what we did. We went to – we had a town hall meeting. We talked to them. We said, instead of downloading a movie and it takes you 1.5 hours, how about 5 minutes? That has impact as opposed to saying we're going to give you 20 meg or 30 meg. That's a hard concept to understand.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next element we did, obviously, was we bundled it so that they get the price break with your voice, your video, and your broadband. We had clear, concise, attention-getting creatives on our billboards and our direct mail and our door hangers. And then as soon as we rolled out the product, we immediately started taking surveys of those customers that took the product. Why did you take it? Could we have done something better? How do we adjust the plan? So those are kind of some of the things that we did as we went through that process.
Mm-hmm. That is actually very good because of the survey. Well, I should probably tell the audience, I've done technology marketing for many, many more years than I've done basic broadband consulting. And one of those, you know, issues that you deal with, you know, is getting that feedback to understand what's working and what's not, and being able to switch or change up or expand the message on a dime. I mean, that's generally the most successful marketing entities, whether it's a small company or a big company, is that ability to gather data and quickly adjust the campaign, but without losing the core message.
Exactly. I agree 100%.
Interesting deal. That just sounds like you guys had a lot of fun. How big was your marketing department?
I have a director of programming that basically probably 70-80% of that person's time is just dealing with our programmers. And as you know, when you offer video services, you have to constantly deal with all your programmers, your ESPNs, you know, your CNNs, all the networks all have to be dealt with, and that's a big job for that person. She also, because she does have extra time, though, besides that, I put her into community involvement, basically targeting the schools. We spend a lot of time doing grassroots marketing inside school systems, whether it's funding plays, whether it's funding students like science camps or science fairs, whether it's athletic programs that we're funding in some way, somehow. She's heavily involved in that, so that's one person. Then I have my actual marketing director who works for me, who does nothing but constantly, every day, takes the pulse of the market, always looking for new angles and new ways and better ways to get our message out of what we offer. And that's and of course, there's all kinds of reports involved in that, and there's all kinds of studies involved in that. She works with data partners to get all kinds of data. That's her particular thing. Then I have a marketing specialist that works for me. That's a creative specialist, and all he does is work on creative stuff. And in the past, they had a PR firm that was very expensive. They did good work, nothing wrong with that, but we're able to bring it in-house and have an instant feedback at a much more efficient way of doing it, both economically and also in turnaround. And then I have a community affairs director who does nothing that makes sure that the community is constantly involved in everything we do. We belong to the community. You know, I always tell people, your customers, what they think of your company and what your employees think of your company really is what determines your brand. You mm-hmm. can say anything you want to about your brand on the billboard. You can say anything you want to on TV about your brand. But your brand is determined by what your customers think about you and what you think about yourself in the final analysis. So we work a lot on our community image because we are totally grassroots. And once we got up and running, Craig, and got a critical mass of customers, and we got to the break-even point financially, I took all my advertising, not all of it, but I took a large portion of my advertising dollars and plowed it straight into grassroots. I mean, there is not a child's soccer team in our footprint that don't have our logo on their jersey. There's not a high school basketball team that the billboard or the scoreboard doesn't have our logo on it. We're constantly involved, and we reach out to civic organizations all the time, make presentations about what our plans are, where we're going from here, what our next steps are, to constantly build that support from the grassroots level.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, these definitely are key points that make a lot of sense. And, you know, now one of the things that I find interesting that people maybe not familiar with marketing get into this trap of thinking that they need to market on price. And in my experience across the board, when dealing with technology, when you get to a level of competing on price, especially if you're a smaller organization against a larger organization with, you know, millions of dollars to spend for marketing, price is pretty much, you know, you may as well just go out and, you know, jump off a bridge, because I think you're pretty much doomed from the get-go if that is the core of your marketing campaign.
We often refer to it as race to the bottom.
You know? Race to the bottom, there you go.
Who wants to get to the bottom first?
Okay.
But, you know, you're exactly right. And you know, we build our image and our branding. There's no doubt about it, you have to be competitive. I mean, that's just, especially in today's economic time, you got to be competitive. But price is not where what we build our reputation on. It's about local community service, one-on-one community service. You can actually walk into our doors. We have a brick-and-mortar business, obviously. You can walk in our doors and talk to anybody. When you call and talk to us on the phone, you're not making a long-distance call. You're calling a local number inside that building. You could actually come to that building and talk to the person that you just talked to the phone on if you want to drive down there. That is one of the big advantages of a local company, is that you have that type of natural affinity for the mm-hmm. customer base. I give you a real quick story. I got an email from a lady one morning, and she said, "I just want to compliment your technical NOC services." And if you don't know what that is, people listening, NOC is your network operations people that stay up all night long, all day long, and make sure your network is up and running and make sure there's no faults and always monitoring the network. This lady had actually lost her remote control. She calls the NOC at 10 o'clock at night and says, "I need a new remote control." And the guy says, "Well, you know, the problem is office is open from 8, you know, from 7:30 to 5:30, you know, Monday through Friday, blah, blah, blah." And she says, "Well, I got these grandkids here. I don't know what to do." So the guy in the NOC says, "Well, where do you live?" "Well, I live about 5 miles away." He says, "If you will drive to the front gate, I will bring you a new remote control." Now, you can't get that unless you're local. and you can bet that lady has repeated that story many, many times. And Craig, you know what that's worth in terms of marketing.
Mm-hmm. It is everything, because that is the one thing that will retain all but the most fickle of customers if they realize that they can reach out and touch the local provider, and especially if they've had years of experience with, you know, the larger providers where you get shunted off to some call center in another country, and they've had to work with people who just don't understand because they're not there. You know, this level of responsiveness will, like I said, even with the smaller community networks. You know, Reedsburg, Wisconsin, I believe it was a city of 8,000-9,000 people, and they were up against Comcast, and you know, they pretty much based their strength on the personal contact. I mean, that was pretty much it.
it's the grassroots is really important for a local utility. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, when in the build-out cycle, because we have bunches of communities that are building networks, either because of stimulus or other, you know, whatever methods they've used for funding, when do people need to start doing their marketing?
Well, that's a really good question, and the answer is real simple. Before you ever turn the first shovel of dirt, if you don't lay out a detailed marketing plan to build your business model on, then your business model is subject to error. And here's what I mean by that. Most business plans that you'll see, they'll make an assumption. They'll say, okay, we're going to assume that we're going to get a 15 or 20% penetration rate over the first 2 years. The average customer is going to pay, is going to take two of our three or four services. They're going to take two services. Their average monthly ARPU, and for people that don't know, that's that's average revenue per unit. In other words, the average customer is going to pay us $80 a month or whatever it is, times how many people, and that's how you build your business model. And they throw that in the mix, and they give it to the accounting people, and they take a spreadsheet. Next thing you know, so okay, we can afford to do this. I've never liked that model. The model I like is, before we even make those assumptions, we get into that marketplace that we're at, and we're going to say, what is this market? What are the demographics? Who are my early adopters? What type of products are early adopters looking for? What is the churn rate of residents? In other words, is this a bedroom community, or is this a community of apartments and MDUs where people are constantly moving? What is my churn rate going to be before I ever even think about what my costs are? So my opinion is, as part of the business plan, before you even think about the build-out, that marketing needs to be very, very detailed. And it also needs to be adjustable as you move forward, obviously, because you're going to learn things you thought you knew that you realize you didn't know. But I really think that the marketing part of it has to be the most integral piece of putting the business model together. Because let's think about it logically, Craig. If you don't have revenue, nothing else follows. And the only way you get revenue is to have customers, and the only way you have customers is through marketing. I always tell people in my organization, nobody else has a job unless marketing people do their job.
Right.
So I think it has to be before you ever even accept the business plan.
Mm-hmm. And which pretty much is a consistent theme. You and I just recently met at the we met in person at the conference in Washington, where they brought together lots of the winners of BTOP grants. And I don't know about you, but a common theme that I was hearing from some folks who were willing to talk candidly was that people went out with a good application that won money. But it was clear, as they have started to build networks and started to look for ISPs to provide last-mile services, that somebody didn't do the marketing right, or if they didn't do the marketing planning correctly. And now there's trouble clouds on the horizon. I mean, did you hear some of that while you were there as well?
I think to buttress that idea, as you know, BVU, We have a separate divisions company called Focus, and that stands for Finding Opportunities in the United States around broadband properties, around broadband communities, and that division falls under me also. And what we really do is we reach out to help other communities do what we've done, because the demand, you know, we get so many questions. We've been involved in so many other communities helping them do this, and I can tell you, Craig, that the number one request I get, and I'm talking about on a weekly basis, not only from communities but also from independent telcos and others that are wanting to get into this business, is how do I do the marketing piece of it, and how do I do the sustainability piece of it? You know, we think we went down the wrong path. How did you guys do it? How can we change? So I agree with you. That's one of the things, you know, you get all excited about the opportunity. Maybe you get the grant money. Maybe you've already got your network built out to your substations, and now the community says, please, build out the community, the network further, and you get everybody's okay, and you get so excited about the opportunity, you forget about the pieces, the building blocks of it. And the first building block is, are you going to be able to penetrate the market in a way that makes the network sustainable over a long period of time? Because that's another thing that I get a question is all the time, well, once I become a mature network, now what do I do? And that's a real issue, and we can talk about that, obviously, whenever if you'd like to go into that at some point. So I agree with you 100%. I saw a lot of that when we were in D.C., mm-hmm. and I had a lot of people ask me that same question. I saw how you guys did it, you know, help us. So I get a lot of requests for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, how does a community not get to that spot? I mean, it's for those people who have, you know, already gone through the process of getting their projects funded and so forth. I mean, they're kind of in the, they're in the middle of it. So we can come back to the people who have, you know, started and realize they don't have good marketing. But for the people on the beginning stages of trying to go forward with some sort of network, how do they prevent this kind of, you know, marketing shortfall?
Well, that's a $24,000 question, as they used to say, or $64,000, I guess it was. I shouldn't tell them my age here. But the problem is, it's almost, you know, you have to bring in outside help. I mean, if you're in the middle of this already, and you're now finding out that you didn't know what you didn't know, now all of a sudden it's hit you that, hey, our business model that we put together, that our penetration rate was going to be X and our revenue was going to be X, is going to be a big shortfall, then you need to bring in outside help, because it's quite obviously, you know, you've already misread it, so it's time to get some professional help. I can't tell you where that help would come from. Like I say, they reach out to, a lot of these communities reach out to me, a lot of these build-outs reach out to me. I help them as much as I can, but, and there's others in the field that probably could help people. But that's what you have to do. You've got to get some outside help to come in and help you, you know, give you a different perspective, readjust your plan, readjust your model, and go at it again. I firmly believe that every model will work if you just plan it correctly and you follow through correctly and you have someone in place that knows how to do it. Too many times, especially in the communities, municipalities, because they've never had to compete, they don't know how to compete. It's not that they're bad people. It's not that they're not very bright. It's just a whole different concept that they never see. Can I relate one story on that, Craig?
No, please go. Do it. Work it.
let me give an example, a perfect example. And this show you how this is so insidious. It actually happened at BVU, of all places. You know, we got this reputation, and we have been very successful. But one day I'm in the lobby of our night. We have a very nice concrete mortar building, brick and mortar, very nice place, beautiful lobby, a lot of really, really something to be proud of in the community, done a good job with it. But I'm in the lobby one day, and I notice there's people waiting in line at the teller windows to pay, and there are people waiting to pick up set-top boxes for their TVs, waiting to turn on, get a modem for broadband or whatever they're doing. And I'm realizing all these people are in my lobby, and we're not doing anything with these people. So I walked over to the head cashier, and I said, could you tell me how many people come in this lobby every month? She said, oh, yeah, that's easy. I can tell you right now. I said, well, how can you tell me so fast? She said, because I keep a record every day. Let me do some ads here. She said, about 8,000 people a month come to our lobby and pay their bill. I said, 8,000 people a month come to our lobby? Yeah.
Wow.
And I said, and we just let them go to a pay window and walk out. Oh, yeah. I said, well, can they pay at the local banks? Yes, they can. I said, that's interesting. Can they mail in it? Yes. Can they go online and pay? Yes. I said, then why do we have so many people? They like coming here. I said, what? They like coming here. So I said, well, if they like coming here, they're going to love what I do next. So I put together a plan. We totally redid the lobby. Now, before you can pay your bill, before you can do anything, you've got to go through our customer experience demonstration room. Build a room of about 900 square feet. One half is just business customers. One half is for residential. Got a nice fireplace, big HD TV. We have every kind of product set up. We have an Xbox set up. We have a Wii set up. We show you what a smart meter looks like and how it's going to help you on your electric bill. We show you what a gig. We have one gig service running to the computers in there. We show you how fast the gig is and all the different e-solutions that you can run on a computer with when you've got that kind of power. And as a customer comes in the door, they go to a little kiosk. They put in one of six subjects that they're there for, what they're visiting for. It gives them a little paper with a number on it, and they immediately go to the demo room. We set them down. We give them some popcorn. We say, well, let me show you how you program your DVR. What's a DVR? We explain to them. They usually leave with a DVR. They didn't come for one, but they leave with one. Okay? So there's a good example, because we had a utility mentality that said we don't have to sell anybody anything. we had this wonderful opportunity that we had 8,000 people a month. Now, you know, Craig, in retail world, what would you pay to get 8,000 people a month to come to your door?
You have to spend a fortune for that kind of traffic.
Exactly, and it has really increased our add-on sales tremendously. So there's an example that I've told about our own blind spot that we've had for like 2 or 3 years before I realized, oh, wait a minute, we got to treat these. So that's just an example of that. It's not they're not smart people doing this. It's just you have to be really sensitive to what marketing is all about.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you find a good marketing person? Because in my experience, you have bad people. We won't talk about the bad folks, but you have competent people. But I've also found that, you know, it's hard to find really creative people. You know, there are good executioners. There's people who can, you know, crank out a press release, can crank out some brochure copy, right? They're good at the execution of the technical part. But then trying to find that person that has, you know, almost insane levels of creativity. You know, do you look to colleges? Do you try to find somebody, I mean, literally, again, who's, you know, outside of the telecom business? Where do you find that kind of marketing person?
There's organizations like LinkedIn, obviously, that you can obviously search to. And what I do is I actually join different groups on LinkedIn, if you're familiar with what that is.
Yep.
You know, I join different groups, telecom group. I'll join a wire provider group. I was just all these different groups, and I just kind of search around for people on blogs and see what their attitude is and how they think, and kind of reach out to them. The other way to do it, obviously, is to steal talent from people that's been very successful. I mean, that's the most honest way that you do it, is you actually go out and steal talent. In my case, I have a community director that came from community things like putting on shows and plays and worked with community theater. Had nothing to do with broadband. The graphics person that I have that does just great creative. We actually do our own commercials, and then we have our own cross channel spots that we put on our own TV programs. We have 1,000 cross channel spots a month that we've allocated for ourselves, and we actually do our own videoing and everything. And this one person does that. I actually got them straight out of a university. They had finished their master's in arts and science, in arts degree, in arts. And I said, what do you think? And spent some time. And so you just got to kind of be open to the opportunity. Unfortunately, what we don't have in this industry that I don't know of, Craig, and maybe you do, I don't think we have a list of professional marketing firms that have that type of talent every day. There's some out there, but I don't know of a list. Of them, there's a couple, but Pivot Media comes to mind. But I don't know a whole lot of people that actually do that. I think you pretty much have to find your own way when it comes to that. Unfortunately,
that's I was in the technology business for 20 years doing marketing, and you're right about marketing companies. I mean, there are advertising agencies, there are design places, and there are PR firms. And those you can find endlessly
right.
As far as, you know, in existence. But someone who sort of understands the marketing creative, you know, strategy planning stuff, well, there's two things. One is hard to find a list, but I also found being one of those people, it's also hard to find customers because companies could understand, oh, I need a PR person. I need a person
right.
to do the ads. But they don't really
right.
fully understand marketing. And so as a result, they don't have necessarily the appreciation for the marketing creative beast and why they need one of those people.
Well, you know, that goes to the heart of another thing that I have kind of excitement about and a wish for. And I know this is kind of off topic, but it kind of falls in the same area, Craig. Another thing that we don't have is any kind of certification program for anybody that wants to build a municipality broadband out or an independent telco. I would love to have some kind of organization that says, on day one, this is what you do, and if you do it this way, we're going to certify that step. On day two, we're going to certify that step if you do it this way. Totally agnostic as far as, you know, who you use for your vendors. Totally agnostic. It's only the process that will not be agnostic. The process is this, and it takes you all the way through the build-out, the implementation, choosing of the equipment, writing the RFPs, writing the grant requests, managing the grants, you know, all the way through to marketing, sales, and then sustainability of the marketing. If we could find some place that could have a certifying program or some group that could put all this together, including that marketing sales piece that you're talking about, what a powerful tool would be for any organization that wanted to get into this business. And I don't think that exists. And one of my missions is to try to put that together for, like, Fiber to the Home is a good example. It's a nonprofit council. And I'd love to put that together, and we're working on some of those ideas. But as of today, I don't know of anywhere you can get those type of resources.
Right, and it is hard to find. I mean, and in many respects, we're tapping into new ground. You know, there's not been community broadband before. You know, there has been. I mean, even if you look at the companies like AT&T and Comcast, I mean, they have had a path. You know, there's been telephone service and there's been wireless service. On the cable side, you know, you've had cable services. But sort of this idea of broadband, you know, where you have data and voice and you're using broadband to transform communities and economic development and so forth, I mean, that process really hasn't existed. And so there's so many people feeling their way that it does make things difficult. And I should probably use this as an opportunity to have you talk a little bit about what you're doing within Fiber to the Home Council. Because one of our early conversations, you know, you and I, when we first talked, was about, you know, your just gung-ho getting people in from, you know, who are members to learn the basics of marketing. I think at your last conference, your last annual conference, you had like a whole day of marketing sessions, if I'm not mistaken. You know,
tell me, what
have you been doing in that area?
Well, we're emphasizing more of that because of these exact questions that you've brought up. And, of course, you know, you have that kind of experience. You know, you've done this. You understand what the problems are. You understand what needs to be done. And so that's so good about this program is this particular program today that we're talking about this is because people are unaware of the traps that they can get themselves in if they don't do it properly. So what we've at Fiber to the Home Council, we're a nonprofit organization. National organization. We also have affiliate organizations in Europe and Asia, and we promote the expansion of broadband through fiber optics or fiber to the home, fiber to the X, which means fiber to the business also,
mm-hmm.
because we think that the long-term future-proofing of this country in terms of broadband is going to be based around fiber. We don't know of any other technology that would do it. And we're trying to help all those constituents of ours that get involved in this business to be successful. It's very important they are successful. We rank way down the list worldwide in broadband deployment. And for listeners out there, Craig, that don't understand what I'm talking about, here's what I'm talking about. Every transaction that takes place today, almost every transaction, is built around broadband capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't care if it's a TV broadcast. I don't care if you're going online to buy something. I don't care if you're searching for a product or service. I don't care if somebody's processing your bill that you paid in person. So at some point, all that touches broadband. For us as a nation to be a viable economic powerhouse in the future, we must have a sustainable broadband network that is built on not only high speed but reliability. So that's what Fiber to Home does. Well, one of the important pieces of that, Craig, as you know, is not just building it, but also understanding the utilization of it, which is built around the marketing of those products and services that goes over that sustainable network. And so we've got marketing packs we've put together in our annual conference. We also have quarterly. We've got one coming up, matter of fact, next week, June 13th and 14th, in Boston. We have a regional one, and people are coming. We have about 200 different organizations that will be there. And one of the track sessions we're talking about is this marketing opportunity. How do you market? How do you track utilization? You know, one of the things that customers, we always talk about adoption. You've heard this term, Craig. Mm-hmm. You know, adoption. How many percentage of Americans have adopted broadband? Well, that's not the question. The real question is, how are they using broadband? It's one thing to say I can surf the web and I can check my email. But e-solutions are going to be the secret to economic development in this country. And we need some way to teach people how to sell those e-solutions, how to propose those e-solutions, and also how to track and measure the value. You know, here at BVU, we have been able, through statistical analysis and actual survey work, to prove that since we built our network, we have brought 1,500 new high-paying jobs to our region that are definitely linked to our broadband capability of building a broadband network. That's 1,500 jobs. That's 1,500 more taxpayers. That's 1,500 more infrastructure. And that's really what this is all about. So if the marketing piece is the piece that's kind of the glue that holds this all together. How do you take a product and service, put it in a format or in a form that the consumer can use in a way that they can leverage it for the quality of life? Because at the end of the day, this is all quality of life issues for all of us. A good job, quality of life, and a lot of it builds around this whole idea of having a sustainable broadband network. So you can kind of hear my my passion for fiber to the home. Okay.
Yes, indeed. There is no doubt about the passion part. But isn't marketing, I mean, really and truly, you know, isn't passion the core of marketing? Because I think that if you're gonna head up a marketing program, if you're going to hire somebody to be the head of that marketing program, that person has to have a certain level of passion, because that, to me, is what sparks the creative aspect of marketing. Otherwise, you just have people cranking out mindless copy that, you know, is factually correct, but it does nothing to move people's souls and their checkbooks.
Well, obviously, I agree with you, because what's interesting is I've been to all sides of this. I cut my teeth at Procter & Gamble into marketing, and that's like getting a PhD in marketing, I always say, after college.
I hear you on that one.
But what you really got to have is a dedication to a mission, a focus on a mission, and then you build that marketing around that focus of that mission, and that's where the passion comes from. Because the mission, for instance, most community broadband's missions is to improve the quality of life of its citizens. If you think about, why do we have communities? We have communities and governments to improve the quality of life of the citizens. If that wasn't our mission, we shouldn't exist. Well, if you have that as your mission, then the passion toward that is, what can I do to improve the quality of life? In this particular area, it's technology, and it's the technology of broadband. So I agree with you 100%. You got to have passion, but that passion has to be focused around a real mission, a real understanding of, this is, at the end of the day, this is what I'm trying to accomplish, not for the sake of accomplishment, but actually for the sake of improving and empowering people's lives.
Right. So it's the passion for the mission, and then that in and of itself, that in turn will drive the marketing and the success and the effectiveness of the marketing and so forth. And now, by the way, in terms of planning, you know, you talked at the very beginning about having a comprehensive planning, a comprehensive marketing plan. Who are the kinds of people that you bring together to create such a plan?
Well, that's really an interesting question. Assuming you have your marketing team in place, and Craig, our earlier comments that you made especially, doesn't always necessarily, you know, bode well if you don't have. Mm-hmm. And finding those right people are very difficult. I always tell people, you don't know what marketing costs you until you don't have it. Then you know what it really costs not to have it. Mm-hmm. You know, so assuming you have the right team, my approach has always been this. And just so you know, Craig, I've not always just been marketing. I mean, I've actually been, you know, I've been CEO, I've been executive vice president. I've had the responsibility of, you know, the paycheck and the financial side and the operations side also. So I think it gives me a little, you know, kind of a unique perspective. Mm-hmm. When it comes to the marketing side. And I've always believed that you give them the power and the authority to design the plan. Then what you do is, you get buy-in from the whole organization to the plan, and this is how it starts. This is how we do it at BVU.
Mm-hmm.
I get a plan together, a design of a plan, either a product or service or a new launch, and I take that idea and I put it together in two ways. The What is the objective of the plan for the customer? Why would a customer do this? What are the financial requirements to make the plan work? And then what's the return on investment? I put all that together before I do anything else. Once that proves itself, then we start putting the plan together in its actual pieces, the tactics that are around the plan. Then what do? Well, we first pull in the financial people. We say, okay, here's our plan. Do you agree with our numbers if we make these certain assumptions, and are you willing to fund it if we can guarantee you this much return investment? You've got to get that financial person or people to buy into your plan and to approve that plan so they'll fund it. That's number one. Number two, I always bring in the operations people next. You know, we forget as marketing people sometimes that the operations people, especially the people who actually go to the person's home or business and installs that, is the face of the company. Mm-hmm. I have to get them to believe in the plan. They have to see it as being not only good for the company, but good for them. So we put together this plan built around what is the easiest thing for you to do. Can you give us ideas? And a good example is we actually incentivize our installers. Our installers get an incentive just to upgrade someone when they're at their home or at their business. And some of them make a real good living at it, to be honest with you. So mm-hmm. So that's number two. Then number three, the sales staff and this what we call our CSR, customer service representatives, even our NOC people who are taking technical calls, we actually have meetings with them, and we train them on that product or service, and we show them what the benefits are for our customers so that when a customer calls in and asks, why should I do this, or a customer asks any question that would lead to that CSR or that actual technical person say, hey, here's the benefits of this. So we ground them into – we make them grounded into this idea of what the product and service is all about. We get their buy-in, and we show them the results. Now, what happens is in previous marketing plans that we lay out, as the success comes in, we share that success with the whole company, all departments, by having meetings saying, here's what we were able to do because of you being part of this team. We make them part of the team, and we get a lot of buy-in on that. And, of course, the next step of the buy-in is outside the company, and that's when we go to all the civic organizations. First step is the Rotary Club, the Ruotan Club, the Chambers of Commerce. I do three or four large Chamber of Commerce presentations every year where we'll pay for breakfast and we bring them all, we bring everyone in, we talk about our next product or service launch. So you bring those constituency groups into that plan so that the day that you actually launch, you've already built a framework and a grassroots effort for demand for the product. So that's kind of how I put it together.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been incredible. The amount of positive feedback from the audience has been pretty outstanding. I mean, I could not have asked for better. And I want to thank you, Kyle, for all of this great information. And I think our archive downloads are going to go off the chart after this particular episode. And we'll probably get you back again to talk about more of what's going on in Bristol and also about Fiber to the Home Council, which, by the way, for our audience, the annual conference is in September. And what was I going to say? It's also regional. Also regional Fiber to the Home get-togethers and so forth. So you should probably plug into those. And so, again, Kyle, thank you very, very much for your time. And let's do it again sometime.
Hey, it's been my great pleasure. And thank you, Craig, for constantly supporting our efforts out here. And we look forward to talking to you again.
No worries. And I want to thank our audience for being with us today. And we'll be back on Wednesday. We'll be talking about innovation in broadband and what defines innovation. On Thursday, we're going to be talking to mayors from several cities around the globe who will be talking about broadband innovation. So definitely stay with Gigabit Nation. And thanks to our sponsor, Hiawatha Broadband Communications. See you next show. Have a great day, everybody.